This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits.
Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, City Limits, and it's a third Wednesday of the month, so we're talking housing today, and Shane McGrath from the Housing for the Aged Action Group will be in shortly talking to us, and also Jack Burton from Friends of Public Housing, long-term activists in this area, and he'll be talking to us as well later in the program.
An interesting show.
Right. And Maxwell's back. She's over there, and I'm Kevin Healy. Anne, how are you?
I'm good, Kevin.
Okay, and Anne, I just want to, well, just before we start, I'm going to give a plug for another station, but I mentioned it in the kitchen to people, but Randa Abdel-Fattah, who's the woman who was the author who caused the cancellation ultimately, because they cancelled her, the Adelaide Festival, but of course they held it.
Don't say she caused it, really.
She was the subject. She was the catalyst.
Yeah.
And but last night on Big Ideas on the ABC, there was an hour interview with her at the Alternate Adelaide Festival set up by other people. And it's absolutely wonderful to hear her and what she had to say. I'm sure people can pick it up. Maybe there's even repeats. They usually repeats of everything on the ABC. In podcasts. So if you missed it last night, I do recommend people listen to that. We're plugging a different station, but it was very, very good indeed. Now, Anne, a cup of tea, I suppose.
Remiss.
Now, we've got you actually picked these cups today, so you know what they are.
I was trying to get even sizes of cups so that there would be no disputes. Right. About who's getting the most tea.
Well, I think, this is a worry. There's one
I'll
with
go
the,
for dots.
You've got the dots, have you?
I'll go for the dots.
Okay, I've got the Chinese writing then.
Okay.
I think I've got the People's Liberation Army or something. Here we go.
Cheers.
Now, you're our economic guru on this because you do a program on economics on Fridays.
We are lay people. We talk to the economists.
Yeah. Now, you might be able to explain this to me because I'm a little confused about these things. Yes.
It can be confusing.
Last night, the governor of the Reserve Bank said that it was tough news for mortgagees, the fact that the interest rates were gone up again. Aww. Tough news, he said. But it would be much worse if inflation gets built into the fibres.
Oh, the fibre.
What's that mean? What's that mean? Come on, can you explain that to me? You're the guru.
So what I love about economists is their poetic nature and the way they come up with all these fabulous metaphors for what's going on in the economy. So it's the fibres now,
that's
is it?
Fibres, yep.
I feel like we're all eating our all bran with these high interest rates.
Yeah, but you might be laughing at it, but you're not explaining what it means to us.
I'll get back to you on that one, Kevin.
Okay.
Oh, Lordy. Building in inflation. So she thinks, they think, you know, they have this one formula that they keep going back to, which is this idea if you raise interest rates, you'll be knocking potential inflation. Doesn't even have to be actual inflation.
No.
And we all know that formula is wrong, and wrong. Because there are so many different causes of inflation. And our economists, with their metaphor, they use the metaphor of the sledgehammer.
Yes, that's right.
So raising interest rates is the sledgehammer.
And one of the causes surely has to start with G and be called greed.
True. You wouldn't think there'd be any price gouging out there or profiteering.
Oh,
surely not.
And how dare you?
No, I wouldn't even suggest it.
Oh, good God, you just did.
No.
Anyway, Pete Hegseth, brilliant mind, who's the Secretary for War in America, as they go to war, of course, and McDonald's turned on Australia overnight, by the way, as well. Now he's turned on us. Yeah, we did. We're not sending.
We did our best to bend over.
Well, Richard Miles yesterday, Colonel Miles. He's
been wanting that one.
Yeah, Colonel Miles. He said that we hadn't been asked, but he was almost saying, I hope they do ask, because obviously if they do, there's no way we'd say no. Mm. But we got attacked for not doing something we weren't asked to do in the first place. So I think that's interesting. But anyway, that aside, Donald is one of the great minds as well. Although I think Richard Miles is right up there in the intelligence department. But Pete Hegseth, he's actually banned photographers now from Pentagon press things when he's there. Because he didn't like a photo of himself that turned up. so he's banned him. He just thought one photo was a bit ordinary.
That's about where you get to when you're controlling the media, isn't it? You sort of, you know, all the selfies you want control of as well.
And speaking of people who just love a bit of war, Andrew Hastie, who's a former, of course, SAS or whatever, those people who kill with a little finger, that lot. But now he's been in the new... in the new reshuffle, because he was out of the ministry there because he upset Suss and all, whatever. But now he's back in again.
Okay.
And he's actually now the shadow minister for industry. And he's come up with a wonderful idea.
Okay.
Yes.
He's getting creative there, is he?
Yes. His first brilliant plan is we should use, this is Australia, we should use electricity from coal, gas and uranium. Not renewables, to power artificial intelligence and advanced robotics.
Oh, no.
Yes, and wield our vast land resources to attract data center investment. So more electricity, more water, more electricity, of course, from coal, gas and uranium. And get rid of renewables. He reckons they've got to go. In fact, the reason he fell out with Sussan was that he was totally opposed to the net zero proposition, which is not net zero, as we know anyway. Not zero. It's just
zero is not net zero.
That's right. Well, he's sort of net, but it's not because it ain't.
He's not even net.
No, that's right. And anyway, that's Andrew's idea, because obviously climate change is no problem whatever at all in the slightest.
No. AI will save us. So the AI nuclear. energy combination is what we're headed for.
That's what we're headed for. We're in a new stage of history, he said. Well, I guess we are with him. And the future belongs to...
Post-civilization.
That's right, yes. And the future belongs to nations that can turn energy security into technological superiority using AI and advanced robotics. And because of what's happening around the world, Australia's in an ideal spot to have it all. And isn't it wonderful?
Running headlong into dystopia there.
Yeah, that's right. Now, he doesn't mention about the water. I mean, the electricity from coal, gas and uranium.
Water?
But I imagine he feels that AI itself can solve the water problem.
Yes.
It can work out how it's going to solve the problem of water.
I think that's all humans.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
So everything's under control.
Good. I can't wait till he's the ministry and the minister for industry.
Yeah, Andrew. Yeah, he'll probably have us at war by that time. Now, you got a feel for them, but. And I'm sure you do, the Australian banks.
The banks.
Yeah. Now, Simon Birmingham, of course, the ex-minister in the Liberal government, is now he's taken over from the ex-Labor Premier, who was the banking spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
He's taken her job. And
no revolving door there.
No. And he's complaining they pay more each year in charges, and these bloody... AI companies and the Apples and the Googles and the Metas and all these companies don't pay enough. And the banks are shocking, actually. He says Apple made $12.4 billion in revenue in Australia in 2024 but paid just $154 million in corporate tax. And that means Apple, whose whole market capitalization is seven times that of the big four banks combined, paid less company tax over an entire year than major banks pay in a fortnight. They enjoy the benefits but avoid the obligations. No equivalent regulation generally wants them to be forced to pay more, and the poor banks are suffering. So,
poor old banks with all their millions in profit.
I think you've got a feel for all of them, haven't you? I mean,
I do.
They're all people we can admire.
always like it when the capitalists start a bun fight between each other.
Yeah, well, subsequent to that...
Where's your class solidarity, Banks?
Well, at the same time, Google is saying it wants to put up an Australian artificial massive Australian artificial intelligence and data centre hub. But it's
$20
billion dollar investment in this. But it's holding back because it's afraid it needs some changes to the rules, otherwise it'll have to pay higher taxes in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, because currently, apparently, as we know, these companies, they hive their money off to their subsidiaries overseas and or into tax havens and don't pay tax here. So it wants to do a deal with Australia so it can invest this $20 billion that's so good for all of us, particularly our power and water and everything else. But it doesn't want to be caught having to pay, unfortunately, how awful, higher taxes.
That sounds like a win-win to me.
Oh, yes. It says, and they don't, they say that Google is not asking for incentives, they said. public funds or changes in the treatment of its existing businesses. We have a proud track record of investing in our operations and digital infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera.
We're going to have to start calling it Google speak, aren't we, instead of double speak.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually. Yeah, so that's that. So it's going well in that area.
Yeah, you're finding all the good news for us today with those big tech companies and the tech bros.
Cheering people up no end here. Now, also, Rio Tinto.
Yes, one of your favourite companies.
Yes, Rio Tinto the planet. Rio Tinto owns ERA, which ran the uranium mine in the Northern Territory, Energy Resources of Australia. But, of course, since they've closed it down, the Kakadu, near Kakadu, they're supposed to be rehabilitating it, and they claim they are, although there's questions about whether they're doing it properly or not and spending enough money, but that's aside. But then there's some people want to take over ERA, and at the moment the local indigenous community, the Jabiluka, because they're still, they've done Ranger, but Jabiluka has still got lots of uranium deposits, but the local people say they will never agree to it, the local indigenous people. Rio Tinto's tended to go along with that, so they're sort of closing up. But there's another mob, a hedge fund investor called Richard Majaides. He's taken it to the federal court because he wants to buy it out. And he's saying... the plaintiff, which is Rio, is asking the court to infer that select and historical opposition will maintain for all time among a diverse group of people, being the local indigenous people, by the way, who live there forever and ever, of people without consideration of the reasons for the past stance. They said a future acquirer of the Jabiluka project would not be bound by ERA's pledge to never mine Jabiluka without consent from traditional owners. Now, this is getting pretty serious, I would have thought. And the plaintiff experts also appear to ignore matters as simple as the possibility of change in government and government policies or a change in the views of traditional owners. So there's still a push on to keep pushing that uranium. But I think that the worrying one is that the court may well not rule that way. I mean, it's a legal argument they're putting up at this stage, but you would not be bound by the pledge because we're a different owner from traditional
Same
owners.
Same operation, different owner.
Yeah.
We get to argue, we could start all over again.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
So we might in fact, is that hedge fund? I think we should all divest, whoever they are.
Yeah, we should all invest in them. millionaire hedge fund investor Richard Majaides, M-A-G-I-D-E-S, anyway, as that's his name. Yeah. His private company, Zen Tree, is the company. Zen Tree Investments.
How dare he use the word Zen?
Yeah, Z-E-N-T-R-Tree. But he can use the word investments, of course.
Yes.
It's okay. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Just black. Investments black.
Anyway, we might get, I think in the next week or two, we'll try and get Dave Sweeney from the Australian Conservation Foundation to come in, because he's been very concerned about that for a long time, that particular issue, that Ranger mine and the rehabilitation and what's going on. Do you want to top up?
Definitely watch that space.
I'm topping up my tea at the moment. Do you want to top up?
No, I'm still going with
mine. You're going okay.
I think I have to wait till mine gets cooler. than you do. Oh, you drink a cotter than I do.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's right. Oh, we men, of course, we put up with things. That's right. We're tough.
You've got tough inside.
Yeah, that's right. Now, our old mate Woodside, another one of our very favourites, Woodside with Prophets.
Mm-hmm. yes.
And we have bemoaned the fact that Meg O'Neill's left, unfortunately.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
Yeah, Meg's gone.
Poor thing.
Yeah, currently got an interim person. Liz Westcott's the current.
Oh, they go
she's
for the
acting.
Women.
Acting, yeah, okay. Liz. Whether she gets the job permanently, I don't know. Wait and see. Mm-hmm. I hope she does. She seems
Liz,
like a nice enough person.
Steer that ship, Liz.
Yeah. Anyway, they've reached the first milestone in their emission reduction strategy. They wanted to cut back. Their scope 1 and 2 greenhouse emissions, mm-hmm. and they've cut them back by all of 15% from the baseline. Isn't that tremendous? Mm-hmm. 15%. And this is while they continue to expand their oil and gas production. So,
what the left hand does and the right hand does.
Oh, it's just absolutely wonderful, isn't it? What a great company. It says here the milestone may ease some pressure from environmentally focused investors, although it is unlikely to stop climate activists who have targeted the company's continued expansion of oil and gas production. Well, these bloody environmentalists, of course, just keep getting in the way. But Liz said, the aforementioned Liz Westcott, mm-hmm. said the results showed Woodside could continue to grow production while lowering the emissions intensity of its operation. As we expand our portfolio and position Woodside to become a global LNG powerhouse, our focus on sustainability is key in delivering shareholder value, she said.
I bet you could do that mathematics by not calculating any emissions that don't happen on Australian soil.
Well, that's scope 3. They're the scope 3 emissions, which is what the people you flog it onto.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't count those.
No.
And indeed, we well should. But we don't. But you'll be pleased to know, in this campaign for the for their sustainability, etc. Well, they did plan a big project in Texas to produce green ammonia as opposed to the much more polluting ammonia they produce.
Brown ammonia.
But now they're delaying the low carbon ammonia production, the green ammonia, because Liz said, customer demand for the green version is also lagging expectations. So the delay was because of the slower development of third-party equipment and services that would enable the Beaumont plant, this is the plant in Texas, to switch from producing traditional grey ammonia to the low-carbon version. And I go on to say, though, we are capitally mindful, and so we will make sure that any investment we make meets our capital allocation framework. The target remains, but we need to make sure the projects are value accretive, that they continue to meet customer needs and meet the priorities and timing that customers are looking for.
I'm glad they've got a target and a framework. Oh, that always helps, doesn't it?
That does. It does, doesn't it?
Even though you keep your eye on the bottom line.
That's right. So apparently at the moment they can't afford to do it because it's
I bet is it more expensive maybe for the businesses to buy?
Well, so just keep on polluting.
Yeah.
Now, also, there's a book just come out called What We Owe the Water. Now, this I'm reading now from a the other Saturday, those little pippy things they put in The Age on Saturday with book reviews, but in the non-fiction section. But I found this one interesting. It's written by a person called Kumi Naidu. I don't know whether that's a male or female, actually. I have no idea, but anyway. But it's called What We Owe the Water. But the write-up about it's interesting. When Kumi Naidu was growing up under apartheid in South Africa, even the ocean was segregated. It might tell us the sex here somewhere. The best and safest beaches were reserved for white people. As a person of colour, this struck him, it's a he, as absurd. How could anyone own the waves? It was an early lesson in the making of an activist. In Pacific nations threatened by rising oceans, Naidu found this injustice in another form. Water is not the threat, water is the messenger. It heralds a truth about the fossil fuel age. This concentrated, searing essay unpacks this truth and urges us to join the call initiated by the Pacific nations for a fossil fuel treaty. How, he asks, can the Australian government claim that it is, quote, standing with the Pacific while still approving new coal, oil and gas projects? Civil society and politicians, he says, must find the moral courage to fight the lies of the fossil fuel giants. The tides are riding, he writes, but so are we.
Calls out Australia from that point of view. Interesting.
Now, the next item, though, is that investor Manulife, another big investor, Manulife, this one's called. They all have good names, and they're sort of, they're lovely euphemistic names, aren't they? Anyway,
speak again.
Manulife wants to tap the unchecked demand for almonds and other crops at a time of geopolitical uncertainty by bringing a 3,908-hectare aggregation across two properties on the banks of the Lachlan River in NSW's Riverina region to the market with $110 million hopes. And Toronto-based Manulife's agricultural asset manager has put up for sale the et cetera, et cetera.
Can you translate that for me?
Well, it means they want to grow lots of almonds. And raised that after the other item because, in fact, almonds
water
are one of the massive users of water. Yes. Like cotton.
Because I can't tell you the details, but maybe a year and a half ago, I remember reading that there was some company that were pulling all their almond trees out of the ground in Australia. Like they were ready to go, or they were producing, and for some reason they had to like ditch them all. And so now they're growing, someone else is growing more of them.
Right, right. No, that's it. look, it's 22 after.
Yes.
I'm presuming Shane must be in the building somewhere. So, look, we'll take a break and we'll hope Shane McGrath's about to join us in the studio.
All right. Shane, if you're listening, come on in.
Seem like bad news all of the time. We got floods and fires and wars and crime. They try to tell me who I ought to blame, but I know who it is because it's always the same. Don't be ashamed if you get confused when you talk to your friends or you watch the news. They try to tell you where it all went wrong, and you don't need to argue, just sing this song. It was rich people stacking the deck, rich people with big fat checks, rich people having a ball, rich people been giving us all. But I had a job and it paid all right, but they laid me off last Thursday night. They tried to tell me where the money went, but I know who it was pinching every cent. It was rich people stacking the deck, rich people with big fat checks, rich people they're having a ball, rich people just all. Now you know the important words. Rich people, it ain't the Jews. Rich people don't pay no dues. Rich people, it ain't the blacks. Rich people don't pay no taxes. Rich people, it ain't immigration. It's rich people and corporations. Rich people, it ain't rednecks. It's rich people with big fat checks. Rich people, they're having a ball. Rich people been f***ing us all.
Cassie Blanton there, getting a real cheer for her live rendition of Rich People. Of course, we'd never say anything bad about Rich People, would we?
No, that song worried me a lot, actually. It worried me a whole lot. speaking of rich people, a mob a mob who a poultry manufacturer called Lemmy Tech Proprietary Limited. Back in March 2023, a worker called Liam Harrington was killed on site. Apparently they'd put a new conveyor system by an overseas company designed to move chicken manure from six belts onto a horizontal belt. It had several safety flaws, including a lack of emergency stop buttons and isolator switches near the tail where Harrington was working. Workers regularly removed a metal guard on the tail policy to check the belt's tracking. Well, once metal guards come up, you know, there's always danger. And after a build-up of manure, Harrington was entangled in the roller of the tail pulley of the horizontal belt and died from the injuries. And anyway, Lemmy Tech finally, this is 3 years ago, but now they've finally got to court at Geelong last week.
Okay.
And they were fined, he was 34 by the way, this young bloke, and they were fined $325,000, which I think is pretty cheap
price
for a life. That's the price of a life, apparently. They showed genuine remorse, apparently, and cooperated with the investigation. Well, what else are they going to do? Anyway, that's the price of a life, $325,000 for this bloke. And Lemmy Tech go on making profit from the whole show.
There you go.
But this is also following the fact that there was much heralded a few years ago that we now have worker safety laws, work safe laws that have also industrial manslaughter included, for which, for the first time ever, employers could go to jail. But thus far, not one employer has seen the inside of a cell over the death of a worker.
Interesting.
Because apparently they all show remorse and they all...
All you have to do is hang your head a bit and you get away with it.
Yeah.
By the way, we should let people know here on City Limits that we are still waiting for...
Shane's obviously been held up. He was coming into the studio when
we were expecting him.
Must be traffic out there or something.
It is housing day. We'll get on to housing in
On to housing very shortly, hopefully. Now, also on workers, a mob called Coforge, they are an Indian company. They provide executive assistance to companies. And KPMG has joined the list of the big international financial companies that are now hiring executive assistants in the Philippines. And this means that they're providing 200 to the KPMG, and these assistants do all sorts of work for the clients here. It means there's 200 workers here, of course, who are losing their job. But it does make a lot of sense, because they do say that quite simply that they can hire these employees over there much, much cheaper.
I'm shocked.
So at least they're open about it. They say, they say they can just...
I think it's the era of openness, isn't it?
Yeah. So they can, you know, they can save lots of money. And all the other companies are doing it, PwC, Pricewaterhouse, EY, Deloitte. They're all using these things, and they're all saying how good it is, because these workers... you know, work hard over there, and
are they employees or they're contracted, aren't they?
They're contracted, yeah. But they do at least openly say, but they're much, much cheaper than hiring Australian workers. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, and of course, which is interesting, because they also tell us how much they care about Australia, even though they're all based in America. But
there's a couple interesting things. Is that layers and layers and layers of contracted workers within contracted workers, because of course, you know, there's a lot of outsourcing to the KPMG and stuff from government and so on. Yeah. So there's layers and layers of that. And then part of me thinks it's about time the white-collar workers got a taste of what outsourcing looks like. Because it was all the blue-collar for so long in this sort of globalised world, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
When they built all the factories overseas.
Yep.
Yeah. So now we've got lots of, people from India, because they're very well educated these days. We've got a whole IT class in India. And now we've got the Philippines, who are all executives.
Yes, that's right. They're assistants. That's right. Mm. So it's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all good. It's a global world.
Speaking of overseas companies, KFC. Yes, one of the great contributors to world health, of course.
Yes.
Good old KFC. Another one got sprung.
Okay.
Yeah. It's settled a class action over rest breaks for workers. Mm. And it settled it for tens of millions of dollars. Yes. More than 80 franchisees, it is 80 franchisees agreed to pay $28.8 million to thousands of current and former staff who alleged they were not provided 10-minute breaks during shifts from 2017 to 2023, and about 90,000 staff are eligible for compensation if the federal court approves the settlement. The deal is the first to be reached on rest break litigation and could have implications for an even bigger case against, McDonald's, where 300,000 staff are alleged to have been denied the breaks. Mm. Any settlement with McDonald's would now have to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It's all very sad, isn't it, for these companies?
Yes.
Mm. And
so it's systemic, isn't it? 80 franchisees. Mm. That means 80 KFC locations.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Where was this? Which country was this?
This is here.
Oh,
that's
it's
right.
Here.
Was,
oh my
yes,
gosh.
Right here.
Land of never will never have slavery.
Right
labor.
Here in true blue Aussie.
Right.
And the case is their defence. McDonald's is arguing staff took undefined micro breaks, which together constitute the 10-minute break. The federal court's expected to hear the matter in May. Will test whether rest breaks must be continuous, but micro breaks. So what's that mean?
I think that you didn't turn around from the customer to pick up the bag of French fries.
That's right.
Within two seconds, it took you 8 seconds. That 4 seconds.
That's right. That's right.
They all add up.
And picking up the product from where it's cooked and taking it to the counter.
That's right.
Is not working as such. I mean, that's
no,
the working
just
is picking
around.
It up and selling it.
That's right.
But going back and forth.
Yeah.
So they could be called micro breaks.
Yes.
Grilled also had the same problem. And it denied more than 15,000 staff their rest breaks, and they copped a bit of a fine as well. But it's getting serious, isn't it?
Did they even have somewhere to rest? Like, do they have a decent little, you know, staff resting area?
Well, no, I don't think so. You'll be pleased to know that Daniel Molino, who's the assistant treasurer federally, I'm sure you've heard of him, Daniel Molino. No one has. But anyway, Daniel Molino.
I just shook my head then.
Yeah. But the earlier item we raised about the Google and company, and they're all, you know, not paying taxes here, and the banks being so upset that they get a free run here, and the banks have to pay so much, the poor dears, it's so terrible.
Yes.
Daniel said, the government may be open to tax changes to accommodate massive new investment in data centres, but will remain a coveted jurisdiction. So they've got to get a balance between the incentives you get to bring them here and the tax things that the banks are complaining about. So
it's difficult. How do you please both of them?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? But they're trying to sort it out.
Oh,
yeah.
He's in a no-win there.
No,
he's getting
pulled
one direction and the other. I mean, how's his revolving door going to look?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a worry. But anyway, they're trying to sort that one out.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see his problem. Yeah.
Yep. I think we'll take another break because the next item I've got is about again unions moving into, this is awful, into oil and gas in the Pilbara where. The poor companies have for a long time survived, and they keep saying how well we've done without unions interfering in our business, and the unions are turning up and...
Never causing trouble.
I don't know what's happened to Shane today. This is a pretty ordinary link. We'll have to take a break, come back, and we'll get Jack on the line,
I think. Get Jack on the line when we come back. Okie doke. You are with City Limits.
Okay, and Jack Burden on the line. Jack, of course, a long-term activist, member of Friends of Public Housing. Jack, before we start, though, this will excite you no end, I'm sure. There's an expo on tomorrow and Friday at Glen Waverley, Melbourne Retirement Village and Resort Expo. On display will be the latest resort-style developments, as well as established villages and all. Don't miss it. It could change your life, all this. And you'll be surprised to know, for all that, it's free admission, Jack. You can get in free to find out how they're going to rip you off. Isn't that terrific? Free.
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but you can hear me okay, I trust.
We can hear you, Jack, but you, yes. And I know you've got a few items you wanted to talk about today, including the demolition of the public towers and the legal action that's been taken.
Yes, yes, I do. Yeah, it was just a bit of an update of what's going on there. So right now, basically, the Homes Victoria can't throw out any or evict any more of the tenants until all the legal action is complete, which is good news for the tenants, but Homes Victoria, of course, haven't told them that, but thank goodness that the activist organisations involved in supporting them have told them. We with Friends of Public Housing, for instance, have gone around and, yeah, the tenants weren't even aware of it. There's only about 32 households remaining in the towers around North Melbourne and Flemington that are coming down. But class action has now been taken to the Australian High Court. It all sort of a bit mystifying to me. I mean, you got a Supreme Court, now you got a High Court. I mean, you know, where's the last court of recourse, I guess? But
The High Court's it, but they have to agree to take the case. Have they agreed to take it yet, or is it just at that stage, do you know?
They just said it's being taken to, the injunction was provided by the Victorian Court of Appeal. So there you go, yet another court. So they've actually said that, yeah, so that can't be done. So that's, I guess, is good news in terms of the people that are remaining. But then in the meantime, I've now seen announcements that there are a whole another tranche of towers that are about to come down, and hopefully the tenants there have been communicated a bit better, because it'd be rather devastating to find out that your home of decades is all of a sudden coming down around you. So this is the towers in Albert Park, Kensington, North Melbourne, more of them in North Melbourne, Paran and St Kilda. And they're saying relocations are scheduled to begin in July. So hopefully that sort of rubbish might get pushed back or stopped if we can get that far. But, that's where we're at now in terms of the tower demolition. So it's been great to have the Greens and the Socialists and a number of the housing activist groups being behind all of this and supporting the tenants. So cause it must be a pretty terrible time for the tenants to put up with.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, as you say, we mentioned last month, I think, that they're now talking about towers where they've had elderly people who've lived there for years, and, I mean, the disruption to their lives is going to be quite devastating.
Yeah, yeah. And it's actually interesting. I picked up a little snippet. There was an instance in Canberra, believe it or not, where there were three women in different locations who were going to be tossed out of their housing of 27 and 42 years in a couple of the cases. And they've been told they've got to move on because of the state's growing and renewing public housing program. You know, lovely, lovely marketing words. And that they're actually being told, the governor's been told they cannot do it. And in scenes, I say, reminiscence of the castle, I don't know if people are familiar with that Australian cult movie, The Castle, but basically said, yeah, it was interference with someone's home, it must be lawful, and the ACT Supreme Court, in fact, said it was not lawful what was being done because it was interfering with someone's home. So forget all these economic business cases and stuff. The protection of someone's home stood above that, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, thank goodness.
A wonderful precedent.
That's a positive, isn't it? The original Supreme Court decision in Victoria said that the government did not have to take into account the rights of the tenants, which surely is something you can argue at the High Court, I would have thought.
Yeah, hang on, come again.
I'm just saying that Her Honour at the original Supreme Court decision said that the rights of the residents didn't have to be taken into account by the government, and that surely there's got to be an argument against that.
So there is clearly an argument because it's what are we here for? The government is here to serve the people. It's not here to serve the developers who are going to benefit out of this.
You're so innocent. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. And then just recently I happened to be wandering through Berkeley Square Shopping Centre in Brunswick, and there's one of these little pop-up booths in the middle of, normally some sort of charity. Anyway, it was Homes Victoria were handing out this multi-fold glossy brochure about the big housing build, and more than 16,000 homes are underway, more to come as part of a high-rise redevelopment project. And then there's this big map of Melbourne and every area that's coming down, they're all in green dots, so it makes it look like environmentally friendly,
You're awake to the propaganda.
all over the place. And we're transforming older social housing precincts. They call it social housing, not public housing. Mm-hmm. But then they actually say, and we're transforming it all into better versions of social housing and affordable rental housing. Well, and actually give an explanation of what is public housing and what is community housing, because that's what social housing is a part of. But that's a lie already, because they're actually not building any public housing. So why don't they just say we're transforming it into more community housing and affordable rental housing? And because the whole point is that style of housing doesn't take in the people on the lowest incomes.
Mm-hmm. Did you manage to have a chat with them?
Yes. And I can barely hear you, but I'm just trucking on anyway, talking.
Yeah, maybe you could walk to... Are you on a mobile phone?
Yeah.
Or we could try having you...
There might be a bit of interference. There might be a van from the government outside my front window.
You hear the click, it's ASIO, by the way.
It actually pulled my headset out, and it's still weird on the even on the speaker. So, but anyway, but that sort of really pissed me off, and I was almost going to go off my head, and then I realised the poor old Homes Victoria lady, just an employee probably on a low salary, and they didn't deserve the wrath of Jack, I guess. So, yeah, they use the word retire the older high rise. Not we're going to demolish people's homes. We're going to retire the older high rise, and it sort of reminded me of the spin doctors that got in there and they said, "Hey, what sort of messaging can we use here?" And it was interesting. They actually bothered to go to a local shopping centre and hand it out. And I presume they're doing it in shopping centres around the place where they're worried that this might impact their vote, in terms of what they're doing. And they claim that the old high-rise doesn't support modern living standards, falls short on amenity, and I have issues with the age and maintenance of the existing public housing towers. And like, hang on, guys, it's the government who's actually deliberately caused that. Oh, you know, so they deliberately caused it, and now they've got issue with it. You know, they have issue with themselves. So anyway, that's all a bit sad.
That whole maintenance, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You run them down, yeah, and then you say they've got to come down, which is very, yeah, clever,
and
yeah, trick.
The Victorian Auditor General's office has, on numerous occasions, come out and actually criticise the government for not having a maintenance program for the public housing. You know, forward preventative maintenance rather than just responding to calls, which we have numerous instances where responses to calls take months to respond to, and people, and that includes things like toilets not working. And we know that the towers also don't have issues with age. We've had numerous reports by architects and researchers from RMIT and the architect firm office have all produced reports that in fact it's far cheaper to just renovate those apartments, let alone also far less disruptive for the poor people who are getting tossed out of their homes. So, yeah, so
and
it's all
more
a bit sad.
Environmentally friendly as well.
And more environmental, yeah, that's right, yeah. And by the way, if you've ever been into one of these high-rise buildings, the rooms are actually quite spacious. They're lovely to live inside. And we know from a fact that when they do these new developments, because they're going to try and make more money out of it, they squeeze in smaller bedrooms, and also less bedrooms per apartment anyway. So it's all a bit of a con job, and in the meantime, surrounding what was green grassland and playgrounds for kids and stuff, they build towers of private for sale housing. So, yeah, anyway, that's the developers love it.
Yeah, speaking of Berkeley Square, by the way, Jack, down the road in Berkeley Street, there's a high-rise towers there, mainly for older people as well. That hasn't been named yet. I suppose we could be taking a risk suggesting it, but I'm wondering why that one hasn't come up on their list of demolitions, actually, because it's...
Is in Berkeley Street?
Yeah. In Berkeley Street in Brunswick, there's a high-rise public housing tower. Or towers.
I'll believe you. Yeah. It's, I've seen a list of these so-called 44 towers, and I've actually got their map in front of me. So, yeah, no, it hasn't come up there. Yeah. Maybe... I'm not sure on the ownership of that, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, the one on the Strand in Williamstown, is that on the list? Because that's one, I'm sure.
Yeah, they've got Williamstown here, yep.
That's one developer.
Beautiful green dots.
Yeah, that's one developers have been drooling over for years, because on the Strand it's such valuable real estate right in that spot, yeah.
Oh, unbelievably, yeah. Barrack Beacon and Mark II, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that shortly, because the film about Barrack Beacon's been shown again shortly. We're going to give it a promo at the end of the program today. But you mentioned that 95% of people already relocated from many of those places. Are they being put so close to where they originally lived, or have they been scattered all over the place?
Scattered all over the place. So the point is you're breaking up community. Now, people are new each other, and in many a case, people are feeling extremely pressured to take up their offer, and also being told, well, if you don't take this offer, then you won't get another decent offer. You're going to the back of the list, so you sort of feel under massive pressure to take stuff, and they're scattered all over the place. You know, might even be into other towers which will subsequently be getting demolished, or in some cases we know into community housing, in some cases into properties that are homes Victoria is renting or may already own. So it's just part of the whole system. But we, I remember when we had the holdouts at in Walker Street in Norfolk, where they did the demolitions there of the walk-ups. You know, one of my friends there, she held out and held out and kept knocking back until they finally did give her at least a property near where she had lived in terms of neighbourhood. Because one of the disruptions was that you end up moving out of an area where your doctor and dentist and all your facilities are, you know, the shops you like to go to, etc. So it's not just community that you get disrupted from, it's also the neighbourhood.
And friends and everything else, yeah.
And but she actually, in fact, did get herself a nice terrace house in the end, also with handy accessibility, because, you know, because of her walking capabilities, yeah.
Yeah, there's also this year been articles that the price of housing is rising substantially, that we know rents are going through the roof in terms of pricing. I mean, everything point, and of course it's argued that you know governments want the price of housing to keep rising as well. It's good for them politically. But all this points to the fact that we just need more and more public housing for those who can't afford to get into that market, doesn't it? As we've said time and again, Jack, but we keep saying it.
Yeah. Well, back in the 1950s, it was 30% of development was public housing. Believe it or not, built by government-owned building company. So it was actually the government doing the building.
Mm.
And so that's slightly declined over the years. But I've got to say, there are glimmers of light on the horizon in terms of there is action underway in terms of discounted capital gains tax. So that's one of the tax breaks that investors get. And I'm sure the government, in this is Labor, is also has negative gearing in its sights, because it was something that the Bill Shorten tried to take to election.
Yep.
And so we know ideologically the Labor Party, I think, is opposed to, I'm not promoting any party over another. I know the Greens and the Socialists are also opposed to these taxes, but it's basically political suicide for any of them to try and bring it in. Was deemed to be so. But I now notice that the capital gains tax, which at least the thin edge of the wedge, is being addressed. And will help drive down the price of housing, and will also free up investment properties for other, you know, for people to rent at a lower price. Which will take the pressure off existing public housing queues.
Yeah, I heard a developer the other day say that this was dangerous if you took these. If you cut capital gains or you got rid of negative gearing, because this would have less rentals on the market, so it's even harder for people. So they obviously care about the people out there, Jack.
Yeah, well, it's all a load of BS. I don't think the guy's using his economists to say that. They're using their profit generation spreadsheet to say, oh, it's bad for profits. That's all it is bad for. They love the price of housing to go up. They make more. And by the way, the banks make more. 60 to 70% of bank lending is related to housing. So, and which is an aberration in Australia versus other banking in other countries around the world. We're the highest in terms of the amount of profit that a bank makes out of housing lending.
Yeah.
It's extreme here in Australia.
That's what they call non-productive lending. So they're not producing often anything else because the house is already there. So all you're doing is putting more money into the economy for a higher price. So, so that means that, the productive capacity of the economy is actually being undermined as well.
Throw
that one in.
Well, you sound like you're an economist.
I like to do my economist bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But so guess how much money the banks donate to the political parties? And as you said, what was it? We've got now Simon Birmingham is now head of the Banking Association. Previously, Anna Bligh. strangely enough, they're always, you know, high-level politicians happen to all of a sudden also be experts in banking.
Uh-huh. How does that work?
Yeah.
Experts in lobbying, I'd say.
Yeah, but no, but experts in lobbying and, well, good connections. So, it's all a rather dirty system. And you've got banks making, you know, $10 billion, $20 billion profit a year, you know, like...
And
all that lending is to investors. So a big giant slab of that is lending to investors. So get the investors off the market, let them start investing in manufacturing facilities or whatever else the country needs.
That's right.
And let's get back to what housing was, which was a home, not an asset to be traded and made money out of.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the problem, of course. It's seen as an asset rather than a necessity. Jack, we'll finish up on the basis that the film about the Barak Bacon struggle, the fight to save Barak Bacon, the documentary, I know you saw it recently somewhere, didn't you? I know.
Well, highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's been shown on the 25th of March. That's next Wednesday, isn't it? Yes. Next Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the St Kilda Sports Club, which is 66 Fitzroy Street in St Kilda, and the film will start from 6:30. I think you can get some grog at the bar as well and a bit of food. It's hosted by Save Public Housing Collective and Care Not Cruelty. So Jack, you do. I know you saw it. You recommend this film?
I would highly recommend it. It's an absolute insight. It uses the right messaging. It talks about what's going on, the types of housing being involved. Can't recommend it more. Yeah.
Okay, and there'll also be open discussion and with people after the at the end of the film. So there'll also be discussion about the whole issue.
Yep.
So that's next Wednesday. So we'll give that another plug next Wednesday itself, but it's 6 o'clock. So Jack, look, thanks for your time this morning and. It won't go away, so we'll talk to you about it again next month.
Yeah, good on you. Okay, and I'll get a better headset.
Look
right.
forward to it, Jack.
Yeah, sorry about that, Jack, but okay, good luck and take care of yourself, Jack. Okay.
See ya.
Bye
okay.
Now. Okay, Jack Burden there, as you can tell, quite a passionate fighter for public housing. And
the message worth repeating, isn't it?
Yeah, and next week it's a fourth Wednesday, and we've got something on the program.
we'll
have something on the program
next
week.
We'll be back with City Limits next week, Wednesday at 9 a.m. It's been a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Anne.
All right. You are on 3CR Community Radio.